Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Welcome to the Drop the Needle podcast, your backstage pass to the corporate jungle. I'm your host, Jim Allstott, and here, industry titans step up to the mic, sharing their epic journeys. We're hitting the high notes and the low notes of their careers, creating a symphony of success. This isn't just another interview show. It's where truth bombs are dropped and secrets are revealed. So grab your conductor's baton, because who knows, this just might help you compose the next huge hit of your career. Are you ready? Let's go. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Drop the Needle podcast. I'm your host, Jim Allstott, and as always, I'm very happy you all decided to make it. Well, this is part two with Joe McQuillan, and I hope you really enjoyed part one as much as I did. And again, without further ado, on to part two.
Chris told me one of the reasons they, and he refers to God as the source, sometimes God, you know, source is a big one, mm-hmm. You know, it's the source of everything. And I was given this task because I'm an unlikely, John St. Augustine, who I love, John says, he calls me the unwilling prophet, right? It was like you were just, you know, cast upon you. But he said, you know, Chris said, Pop, you're a good ambassador because you don't look like you believe in what you're talking about. And that helps other people.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not in flowing robes. You know, I don't
ponytail and beads.
I couldn't grow a ponytail if you put a gun to my head.
Yeah. Well, I mean? Yeah. Look at
Neither
me.
Could you, buddy.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, I got to get a haircut. It's getting out of line right now.
I was going to mention something, but you know.
Go ahead. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The hair. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, and I don't care about that either. You know what I mean?
That's envy.
I care about carrying a message. And if one person, as crazy as this sounds, Jim, if one person gets out of this podcast, you know, an avenue of relief or hope,
yeah,
then you and I did our job. You know, Saint, I don't quote the scripture very often, but, you know, Saint Paul said, I have run my race. I have been poured out like a libation. Right. And I'll finish something like this. And I say, Chris, we did our job today, buddy. We did our job.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And that's part of what I made a switch in the podcast, about episode 11 or 12, because I felt that this was something that I was drawn to do. I mean, it was non-negotiable.
It's a calling.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And why? There's no logical explanation as to why I made this move in this direction of spirituality other than a calling. And my thought is, and still, and was at that time, that when people experience these things, they naturally will have a lot would call healthy skepticism about these happenings, and then push it away. And my thought is, if one person at the end of listening to this with one of the guests says, you know what, I'm not alone in this. I'm not crazy. This is really happening. The job is done, because people need to know that they have a place. They're not strange. They're not weird. They're not crazy. This is real. And this does happen. And it's happened. Let's put it this way. In my personal experience, which isn't nearly as in-depth as yours, but my personal experience, the information is too accurate and too consistent to be coincidence.
No.
You know?
No. It's and another thing, you know, here's something, you know, people can deny and other side and woo-woo and all that. And
right.
It's like, hey, dude, you know, I don't want to ruin the ending for you, but we're all going.
Not getting out of this alive.
Yeah, I don't want to ruin the show for you, but we're all going.
Spoiler alert.
Right. You know, so, you know, well, I'm going down to Naples and I do it every year, you know, for a month, and Sally comes down for a week with Caroline and her fiance. Then Will comes in later with his buddy and we go, you know, and I love to write there. It really helps me. It's a great place for me to write. And I'll look up, oh, I wonder if that restaurant's still here. You know, I wonder what this, this one's new, this one, you know, or I want to see what time, you know, the Naples Zoo opens, whatever. I'm online looking stuff up, or somebody's planning a vacation. They're online looking up beaches and bars and restaurants,
right,
and shops, right? Well, we're all going to the other side at the end of this run, you know, so you might as well try to figure out what's next, right?
And yeah.
And for me, none of this, you know, I grew up 13 years of Catholic education. The last year was a little rocky. We had a private Catholic college. We had a falling out of ideas of how a young gentleman should act. You know, so
Differing philosophies.
They just, you know, channeled. You know, they were far more on the Pauline philosophy, and I was more on the Jimmy Buffett philosophy. You know,
that's right.
And so,
good old Bama breeze.
Yeah. Oh, baby. So. You know, so what I'm just saying is, when the end result is you're going, do a little research, figure out what that means. And the stuff that I'm about this deep in the knowledge of the other. I mean, I did a past life regression with this wonderful gal, Sue Frederick, out of Phoenix. We spoke together at Helping Parents Heal, their national conference. And then we did a podcast together on Thin Places, which is basically, you know, where the veil is thinnest between both worlds. And there are some personal thin places, and we can do a whole episode on thin places. And there's some that are just, you know, generally across the board. You know, Siesta Key Beach in Sarasota is quartz crystal. It's 99% quartz crystal. So, you know, they have drum ceremonies when the suns come up. I go out there at 3 o'clock in the morning, something very special. The veil between both worlds is very thin at that spot. And there's a bunch of those spots, you know. And so, you know, I did a past life regression. And I've learned a lot, that this isn't our only rodeo. We've been through this.
Right. Yes.
40 times. I don't know. You know, we've been through this.
Some a lot more, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just threw a number out to begin with.
Yeah.
Because it's a number. Right?
Right.
But what I did find from this research and from a past life regression was that the cast of characters are consistent. It's like a traveling theater group. The roles change,
which is awesome.
But you know, I think soulmate is a Hallmark term. I think soul family is legit, and your soul family stays with you through the lifetimes in different roles. My sister was my mom. You know, Christopher, who was my son, was my little brother in this one. You know, so the you know, some characters aren't in this play, and some are, you know, but it's consistently the same cast. I didn't know that. You know, how would I know that, right? They don't teach that in catechism.
No.
You know,
no.
You know, so there's so much more that's left, you know, to try to figure out. And it's all going to be, I mean, there's times Christopher will say to me, and I've said it in the book, he'll say, you know what? It's kind of like, you know, he said, this one's just over your head, Pop. You won't get this until you cross over, you know, not being critical, but there's things that I just can't grasp.
Beyond your pay grade right now.
Way above my pay grade. And that I won't, but he said, the minute you cross over, One of the coolest things, Jim, is when his aunt, Marcia, was his godmother. Mm-hmm. And Marcia was one of my favorite people in the whole world. We just adored each other. And I would keep, when she was transitioning, she was in hospice. And she had read the books, of course, when they first came out. But the book when it first came out, and then because the second one didn't come out till after she transitioned. But the first book was, the third book's got a whole chapter on her. But big source of love for me growing up and confidence. And she said, you know, while she was a couple of days before, her son had hooked up her iPod. Mm-hmm. And so she would listen to my book when she would go off to sleep at night. And she said, honey, Joey, she called me Joey. She said, you gave me the greatest gift. I read your book and I'm not afraid to die. You know, a year later for my birthday, January 9th, Sally had got me a reading with Jill Nicole, a wonderful meeting in the North Suburbs. And she said, you know, Chris is here, young man, son, but there's another woman. And described Marcia when she was a high school teacher, you know, in the 70s, right? How she looked. And she said, did she call you Joey? I go, yeah. Because she's saying, honey, Joey, thanks for the greatest gift, you know?
Wow.
And so when Chris promised that when Marcia transitioned, he'd be there. And after she transitioned, she said, Dad, you know, I told you. And he named who was there, Bobby, Billy, Pat, Jerry, Carrie. You know, we were all there to greet her. He said, but then she had to go somewhere, like a spa.
Mm-hmm.
And when she came back, she was younger than when I was even a kid. Oh, wow. And when it took me a while to figure it out, you know. And what he was telling me is that she died of cancer. and the cancer stayed with her body on this side, but the trauma crossed. So she had to go somewhere. And I love it, like a spa. What woman mm-hmm. doesn't want to go to a spa
right.
where the trauma was dealt with? And then she joined the family group, and it was this huge celebration,
wow.
right? It was like, okay, now I get it. You know, we do a life review. We go somewhere to cleanse, not judge, not punish, not burn with mm-hmm. fire, but cleanse all of the pain, the addiction, the depression, the cancers, whatever, you know, the sciatic nerve.
Oh yeah. I'll take that, man.
Me too. And so you go and then that you get relieved of that. And then you join as young, healthy. And I was talking to a guy last night who had a experience with his best friend dying and coming through to him. And he said, he came through when we were, young adults. I said, you know, my experience is that spirits come through in their prime, you know, whatever that prime is, that, you know, so your mom's not going to come through as a decrepit woman and your mom was taken early in a car wreck,
mm-hmm.
but she'll come through in her prime when and if she comes through to you. You know, Chris comes through at 20, Marcia comes through at a different age, you know, but it's when they're healthy, happy, you know, a person in full, a soul in full, you know.
That's just a beautiful picture.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. I want to ask a couple of sure. other questions if I can. And I know that
it's 8 o'clock on a Thursday morning. Where am I going? Too cold to golf.
Right, right, right. It is too cold to golf. Damn it. I wish I could right now.
Me too.
I know. I'm not sure if you're still in the band or not, or you still have the band together, Frat
yeah,
Dog?
Do you
still have it?
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic.
It's funny you should mention that. We have a sign that said Frat Dog One Stop World Tour. So we came together the first time when Chris was working at Imbalance Ranch Academy, which is a boarding school for boys with addiction, and we just went out there and did a show for him, and then you know never did anything else until. The golf outing, which our first golf outing was, and I got a hat and a wristband for you. I'll send you, Jim.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. And the first one, you know, I can't believe it. We pulled it off. It was 6 months after Chris transitioned. We just got a note from Penguin Players. So we split up the proceeds from Penguin Players, which is in Northern Illinois, adults with learning disabilities, mm-hmm. you know, emotional disabilities, a lot of downs. And Chris was a mentor at their, you know, so they, you know, he wanted to be a special ed, teacher. And so
that's awesome.
They just sent us, Sally was there when I was in Florida for, they do productions a couple times a year and they give out scholarships that we raise. And we raised over $150,000 for them.
Oh, my goodness.
Huge part of scholarships and their productions. And it's just so rewarding, you know, that we were able to do something like that. And so every year we play at the, you know, the outing. And guys are all over the country. So we used to meet for one of my buddies at a studio. We'd meet for a rehearsal, have some pizza, play golf in the morning, whatever. And now that, so now we just make sure we do songs we're all familiar with because
right.
there's no
right.
rehearsal.
That's but right.
We were in Florida and you know, three or four of us were together and they all brought guitars and played golf. And then were actually four of us from you know, just, we missed our drummer and bass player and lead guitar, and we just, you know, did a little hoot nanny, you know, we've just done that's that cool. 2 years in a row. Just kind of when we get together at the golf outing, you know, guys will bring guitars and we'll be on the deck and we'll play some music and everybody joins in and sings and yeah. So music,
I'm sure
is
Chris
a big
is
way
there with
healing.
You.
Oh my God. Chris is,
I'm sure
his off key voice, like his mom, you know, singing away.
That's wonderful.
So yeah, we do have the band still.
That's great. That's
and the name was Frat Dog because
yep, Frat Dog.
There was a dog that it was a Chinese or Japanese chin dog, one of those two, that was in the fraternity. And Christopher would, you know, had a blog set for him and was just funny kid. And pictures when they go out trick or treating, they'd have the dog dressed up like a penguin. And
that's awesome.
When we met with we went to see Rebecca Rose in the first couple years in, and there were 200 people in the audience, right? And she said, okay, I have a young man who drowned in a canoe and sending a song called Live Like You Were Dying to his father, which is the song that kind of
bass,
right? Yep. Right. That's our encore every year. And it's very moving. And he said, and Chris is holding a dog named Cooper. Does that make sense to anybody? Well, that was the name of the fraternity dog, Cooper. I mean, it's like, how do you go ahead and try to figure that one out if it's not real, right? So after that, we said, all right, we'll try to figure a name for the band. I go, you know, we can either call it Cooper or Frat Dog.
And said, all right, Frat Dog's awesome.
Frat Dog. So
that's so awesome.
Yeah. So it was, you know, so yeah, Frat Dog is still together. We're actually not having the golf outing this year because my daughter's getting married in August, but we're already booked for the next year.
You know, congratulations.
So the 10th will be the next year. Yeah. Yeah.
That's
and
exciting.
You know what? And I wrestled with that, Jim. I wrestled. Can I pull? I mean, it was 10 days apart and the golf outing takes a lot of work. It's like, and it would also invalidate the value, the specialness of my daughter's wedding. And and she's always felt a little, you know, Chris required a lot of attention, right? To kind of keep him going on this side. And so the last thing I wanted to do was put any kind of shade over the light.
Right. Yeah. So, I get that.
So I actually got a message from Chris that said, you know, next year's fine, Bob.
Right.
Next year's fine. You know, he's just supporting her.
That's wonderful. That's amazing to me that you were able to muster the strength to do that so quickly after his passing.
You know what? People,
superhuman.
You know, I'm far from superhuman, buddy, but people heal different ways. Sally and William.
Yeah,
shut down.
That's true.
Sally, we had to arrange for Chris William to do some special schooling. This kid was a good student, a star athlete. Sally took 6 months leave of absence, and Caroline ended up going to Europe for a semester because she needed to get away. And I needed to just fill as much time every day playing golf or playing, you know, in the winter playing hockey a couple times a week. And then just between work and anything to keep moving, right?
Right.
It's hard to hit our moving target. And so, you know, and I think Chris figured as long as, we, you know, the old man needs to keep moving, let's have him produce something. Let's have him do some good, you know.
Benefit, and, yeah.
You know, and I just, you know, it's not that I don't feel sorry for myself. I wish I didn't. You know, they say, somebody once says, you know, it's not fair. I said, fair is where you go to ride the merry-go-round and eat candy corn. Fair yeah. doesn't figure in the equation, right?
Not in life, right.
But I'm not going to feel sorry for myself when I can do some good for others, you know.
That's a great attitude to have. And yeah. actually, I think it's more than that. I think it's just how you're, it's in your DNA
yeah.
at this point, you know.
Well, at this point, I would tell you that prior to January 3rd, 2016, I was a little more selfish and cared a lot about my family and me, you know.
So you're more human.
Well, I think.
I mean, that's just being a human, right?
I think I was put on a path to do something different. I don't know if I read it. Did I read the Murakami quote? So, you know, I don't look like a guy that's going to quote Haruki Murakami, right?
But, what?
And once the storm is over, you won't remember how you made it through, how you managed to survive. You won't even be sure whether the storm is really over. But one thing is certain. When you come out of the storm, you won't be the same person who walked in. That's what storms are all about. So it would be a friggin' shame that I lose my son, break my heart, and not have a spiritual metamorphosis, have a spiritual awakening, and want to serve others, you know?
Yeah.
You know, the event happened. Can't unring right. that bell, like I said before, but what are you going to do about it, right? What are you going to do to change, one by one, change people? And if there's somebody out there that's getting this, we did our job today, Jim. You
that's
mean
right.
Chris.
I'm with you on that. And a funny quote came to mind when you were saying, when you were mentioning the Murakami quote, and that was, chicks dig scars.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? It's, yeah. And I know that I'm just making,
I know
one. That's my, you know what? I have one of the worst fucking, defense mechanisms built into me, which is to make fun, to make light in a really difficult, situation. And sometimes I do that so I don't cry, you know? So, I mean,
some of the reviews that written on our first book said, you know, that it's heartwarming, sad, heartbreaking, and sometimes funny.
Oh my God, your Chinese lantern? Can you tell?
Oh my God, yeah. I finally got it down to a science. So we went to Amazon about, and I remember when my niece, God bless, passed away, she had a brain aneurysm, and Chris ended up staying. We all went home to Buffalo. He was in school. We all went home to Buffalo too for the funeral. And she was, you know, 43 years old, two adopted wonderful little Korean boys. And, you know, one's on a scholarship now. The other, he's a great hockey player, and the other's in high school and they're doing just fine. But, and unfortunately their father just passed away of cancer as well. But they got family around them. They got us. So Chris stayed in Buffalo for 2 months to nanny them until they could figure it out. It was an incredible situation. So we all go to Crystal Beach, Ontario, and rent beach houses in the same community. We've been doing it every year for 18 years now. And and after Carrie had transitioned, I saw all these Chinese lanterns that they you know, launched over the lake. I go, this is amazing. So I decided that we need to do that with Chris, you know. And it's a little more complicated. And there's a couple of better ones than others. So me and the dog, we go to the grave often. And he doesn't live there. I know he doesn't live there.
Right.
In fact,
yeah.
A very famous medium said to me, you go to the grave all the time, don't you? I go, yeah. He said, you know, I usually tell people don't do that, but I'm going to tell you it's a great move because that's where you and Chris connect, one of the places. It's a thin place. So I decided me and the dog, we're going to do it at night. We're going to launch a Chinese lantern in honor of our lovely Chris. And so I lit the lantern, and it's a base, either wax or cardboard, that fills up this paper lantern and goes up in the sky. And it's very pretty and very poignant. And if done right,
The caveat.
Tends to start on fire. And if the ground is dry enough, start all the grass on fire around you. And the now I'm trying to stomp this out and be as quiet as possible. And the dog is barking at it, attacking this thing. And I'm like, oh my God, we're gonna go to jail for setting this a prairie fire. You know. Now I've since gotten much better at launch them off a cement pad, not the ground, the hard ground. But so now I still do launch. And they're available on Amazon, but just be a little cautious. They're not as simple as they look. Wow. But we go to the grave all the time. And now instead of me and the dog going to visit Chris, I go there and visit Chris and the dog, you know?
Yeah.
So the dog's ashes are in the grave that I eventually will take over, you know, but, you know, we'll all be together and that's just fine with me.
Yeah.
And by the way, in case anybody wants to know, animals go right to heaven. There's no life review, no BS. They're not sure what it's about. They don't care. They're just very happy, and they're young, and they're healthy.
Right.
And Chris told me at one point, he said, Pop, it's amazing. It's like you're walking down the beach, and all of a sudden one of your dogs will appear, you know, and just run with you for a while. You know?
That's so cool.
And so people wonder, you know, what happens to, you know, because we love those animals.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
But they go right to heaven. You know, no questions, no life reviews, no. And Chris once described angels. He said the best way to describe an angel is they're like Labrador retrievers. They just want to make you happy. They just want to help you.
Oh my gosh.
They just want to love you. And he said, that's what angels, you'll understand that, Bob, you know.
That just hit me square in the heart there.
Yeah.
Man, oh man.
And angels are real, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I thought angels were like leprechauns and trolls, and you know, the bottom line is angels are very real, you know, and they're not humans that evolve. They were always celestial beings. They were always, you know, God. You're assigned a guardian angel. I believe this in all my heart. You know, there's a great sign of a bookstore in London that says, and they're walking in the wall, it says, be not inhospitable to strangers, lest they be angels in disguise, you know.
Right.
Chris fell down a mine shaft, you know, and what could have been 30 feet, he could have been 100. And he landed on a ledge and he talked about a guy in white talking him through it, keeping him awake so he didn't go in shock. I didn't realize till after Christopher transitioned. I thought he was honestly in shock. Sure. There was an angel keeping him awake so that they could airlift him out, you know.
That's amazing.
He had a couple near-death experiences. He was reckless. He was wild.
Yeah,
he lived exactly the way he wanted to.
Mm.
And he went out with his friends, Jim.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And if he would have survived and one or two didn't, he could have never lived with that.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. The weight of that.
Yeah.
Survival guilt is, I mean, that's what a lot of those poor folks in the Twin Towers deal with.
Yeah,
still.
With, you know, guys coming back from Afghanistan.
Yes,
my
same
brother
thing.
Coming back from Vietnam. You know,
yeah.
You know, survivor guilt. So Chris would have never been whole.
Had he survived?
If he had survived.
Wow.
So I think there's a plan. You know, I'm not always privy to it. And by the way, I don't always co-sign it. You know, I'm not happy about it.
Right.
You know, but there is one, you know.
Yeah.
And his plan was leaving early. And my plan was carrying his message. That's what we were given these roles.
I like your plan.
Now, we can deny them. We can deny our role and go and be as hedonistic as we choose, you know.
Sure.
But we do have a plan, you know. We have a life plan, and we're given a soul contract, you know.
I believe that for a couple of reasons to be absolutely true. One of which was because, and I mentioned it on a show that hasn't been aired yet, but my mom, a couple of weeks before her passing, had a dream that everything on her list to accomplish had been completed, and that she was going to die. And she was on a phone call with my aunt and my grandmother. It was the day when everything was, you know, that three-way calling thing was the best thing since sliced cheese.
Yeah.
And my aunt was just like, oh, no, go back to sleep and dream up another list. And she's like, hey, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah,
it's not my list.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had a dream, and that's when some of these things come to me is prophetic dreams.
Yeah.
And I had a dream just before my 21st birthday that I was going to die from a cocaine overdose. And I had never done anything like that before, but I know my buddies were planning on having this big shindig, and I'm sure something of that nature was going to present itself. And I had a dream, and one of my buddies from back home picked me up in a car and just said, well, you're going to die on Thursday. And I was just like, what? And he goes, yeah, you're going to die from a cocaine overdose. Why don't I just go ahead and take care of it right now? And he had a hypodermic needle and was going to stab me with it. And I ended up breaking his wrist over the steering wheel as he was driving. And he goes, you don't understand, man. It's in the book. It's in the book. And I just said, oh yeah, well, why don't you show me this book? And he goes, it's not my book. I'm going to show you. And this was well before my mom, by the way, this is when I was in college. And so he took me to it, and I said, all right. And it was just in this like little shack, and he came out with his book, and it was a big book. I mean, big book. And he opens it up and he goes, right here. And I said, well, do you know when you're going to die? Yeah. I said, well, how are you going to die? Old age, my body's just going to give out. And I was like, well, what about, he goes, I know when Doug's going to die. That was one of our other buddies. And I said, well, when is that? And he told me, and he's like, how's he going to die? Heart attack. He said, he's going to get really fat and he's going to have a heart attack. And I was just like, holy shit. And he goes, so you want to do it now? We can just do it. And I just said, no. Yeah, I'm sure it was an expletive ridden thing that, no, I'm not going to do it. And, I woke up, everybody went out. I did not. I stayed home.
Right. Yeah.
I stayed home.
You were given a message and you listened to it.
I did. And I'm pretty thick when it comes to signs and subtleties. You know, the 0-2x4 works really well with me. And that was something. But anyway. Right.
You know, I think, I mean, I've got plenty of life left, right? I mean, I'll be 68, which is incredible to even think about. In January, I'll be 68. And so, you know, I'm not ready to go. You know, I'm writing another book. We're doing a screenplay. We're doing a bunch, you know.
That's so cool.
You know, I've got family and friends and golf balls to hit and weddings to attend. And, you know, but I got to be honest with you, Jim. If I got tapped on the shoulder and God said, you know,
let's go.
You're in the lineup tomorrow on the other side. Right. You're batting two. You're batting leadoff on the other side.
Right.
I'd be okay with it. You know, I lived the life beyond my wildest dreams, much more than I deserved. And I know what's next. And I get to see my son in the in one on one, you know, not through meditation, not through dreams. You know, and I know what it's going to be like. He told me, he said, Pop, when I crossed, he said, it was a learning curve because I didn't know what to expect. He said, you'll know because of all these conversations we've had. He said, it'll be like you walking through the woods and taking a step over a stream. And then you're on the other side. He said, now I can't bring you across, but I'll be there the minute you take that step. You know, I know what it's going to be like when it's time to go, and I'm not ready, but I'm fine. You know,
there's some comfort in that.
I've had a great run, and there's a lot of comfort in knowing how it's going to happen and what it's going to be like and who's going to be with me on the other side.
I just got the chills.
Yeah, me too. I get them often. Yeah. You know, when Chris comes to me, I get chills across my neck and my back. Mm-hmm. He's here right now. I mean, I just got him.
Must be giving you a hug. I have one question to ask before we go into the musical questions, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. So if you could share one message from Christopher to the world, what would it be?
Okay. He said to me, Pop, it's all about love and service. The rest is all bullshit.
Yes.
That's the message.
That is the message.
It would make a terrible book title. It's all about love and service. The rest is all bullshit.
Well, I don't know.
Actually, I love the third title. The third book is One Foot in Both Worlds.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, because I really feel that.
How close is that to being done?
I'm being lazy and got a lot of stuff going on. So I'll finish it in 25. It'll be done.
Okay, cool.
Well, I think I'll take a big dent out when I'm in Florida in February.
Oh, I bet.
I'm just around half done, maybe just less than half done.
Well, you have an anxious fan here.
Thank you.
Ready to go.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So as anyone can tell you that's listened to the podcast before, this is a section when I ask the guest some musical questions. And as I mentioned regularly, music is the tie that binds. And I believe that everyone has a soundtrack that accompanies their life if they just take a moment to think about it. So here we go with musical questions. What was the first song you fell in love with from the radio, or one that you heard you can remember saying, man, I can't wait?
James Taylor, Sweet Baby James. I had the honor to be in a couple of concerts, and one in Milwaukee where he talked about, and I was with Sally and William and Chris, or not Chris, sorry, he was already on the other side. He was there, but not in the seat. We didn't buy him a seat. And Caroline, and he talked about he had just come back from Europe, from London, and he was broke, and his brother had a child named him after him, James, and he was going to be the godfather. And he drove to from LA to Boston and didn't have money to buy him a present. So we wrote him the song Sweet Baby James.
That's amazing. I had no idea that's where that came from.
Yeah. Yeah, it means a lot.
That's a drop to your knees moment.
Yeah,
that's very cool. Gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. Question number two. Did your family have a song that everyone would belt out on road trips or vacations when you were growing up?
You know the song Harrigan spells Harrigan. Well, it was an Irish, party song. Well, we would McQuillen spells McQuillen, proud of all the Irish blood that's in you. So that was, we just bastardized the Harrigan song.
That's great.
It was every wedding, every picnic, every graduation party that got out of hand, which were most of them.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. We had 8 half kegs at a party I had.
Oh, my God.
8. Incredible.
Wow. My grandfather, Reinhardt, my mom's dad, was notorious for making up songs. And he would, they'd be parodies nowadays, like you're talking about. And he would usually include my name in a lot
there
of those.
Go.
And that when you shared that with me, that's immediately what came to me. I was like, that's real familiar.
Have I shared any of the songs that we've written and recorded together?
You haven't, but you did in the book.
Okay, so we Brad and I, there was a band called Dick Holliday and the Bamboo Gang.
Yep.
Which was huge. And Brad was Dick Holliday. And
okay.
We become very, very, very close. We're like really close buddies. And Clem was the bass player, and Clem plays in Frat Dog. And so Brad and I have gone into studios and written and recorded mostly, he's just a brilliant musician and his unbelievable voice. So I do the words, and he does the music, and we've a handful of wonderful songs. I'll Send You Feathers is one.
Mm-hmm.
Old Grief and Love is another one. And they're brilliant. They're really wonderful,
right,
mostly because of his talent. I'm just the wordsmith. But I'll send you a few after we get done. So
I appreciate that.
We're working on a screenplay, and we've already got a score already written.
That's wonderful.
And there was a song that I'll send it to you also, that Christopher's, one of his best friends, wrote, who's a musician, and it said Stay Put. And when Christopher Ground, he called me and said, Mr. McQuillen, I don't have the money to get to the, I can't leave. He was in Vermont. I can't get to, there. What can I do? I said, you can write me a song. And his name is Sam DuPont. He wrote this amazing, brilliant recorded song for him and his brother called Stay Put. And I'll send that to you too. So music is a big key, I think. Music's felt on the other side like energy, by energy. That's how they feel it. And the old Celts used to believe that the bagpipes is the only instrument that can actually be heard on both sides of the
Yes. mouth. Yeah. Yeah. So I went to school for music. I used to sing opera. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I've been in some bands not that long ago. But yeah, I went to school for music. So music is, well, that's actually one of the big reasons that music and the musical questions come into play with this is because it's such a huge part of my life.
Me too.
It's an everyday occurrence. And there are times that there are certain songs that my, my parents are both passed, but, enjoyed and liked when I sang them. So I sing them every once in a while.
Yeah. They hear it.
It's always
I'm
good.
I'm convinced they hear it.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, me too. Yeah. I really am. One of the other questions that I have is school related back in high school.
Hey, wait, let's talk about the music. There's one song you asked me about. It's called Everything I Own by Bread, David Gates and Bread.
Yeah.
Right. So in the 70s, I loved it. And I thought it was just another frivolous song about him and a girlfriend breaking up and he'd give everything to be together again. I saw him here in Ravinia, Sally and I, and he was opening for Judy Collins, and Judy Collins was fine, but he was amazing. I mean, he had in the 70s stopped performing, said drugs, booze, women, heartache. He said, I was going to die. He took his money, bought a ranch in Montana, and had only started touring in the last 15, 20 years, probably at the time, 10 years. And anyhow, and he was at Ravinia, and it's a beautiful setting. And he said, you know, his dad was a concert pianist, and he'd come play Ravinia every year, and he'd come with him. And that song's about his father. You know, it's not about some girlfriend. It's about when his dad died. Dad crossed that he'd give everything he'd own just to have him back again. And if you listen to the words, you know, you apply it to anybody that you, Chris,
lost,
your mom that you lost.
Yep.
And it's a beautiful song. So it's funny, something that I thought was just a frivolous, you know, 70s song about a boyfriend, girlfriend really was about something much deeper.
That's, you know, isn't that interesting how that, the songs originate sometimes, and what you may think it is completely different. And I love that. What I'm going to do, just so everybody knows, is because we are running out of time, I'm going to go ahead and make sure that we list every one of the songs on the playlist. And I'll also put it in the show notes, but I'm going to ask, I'm going to ask probably my favorite question of this, and it's the last one.
Okay.
And it's sometimes there are songs that you hear that ring so true that they can truly stop you in your tracks.
Yeah.
And the lyrics of the song sound like they were written specifically for you or by you.
Right.
And what's that song?
About my father, the Father, my Son, and the Holy Ghost. It was written by a country music singer whose 21-year-old boy drowned in a canoe accident. And I heard it and it, you know, it's our song, you know, it's Chris and my song, it's Craig's song. And it's an amazing, you know, my father, the Father, my Son, and the Holy Ghost. And it, you know, it's like reading your own story. Right?
Yeah, and I'm sure it is.
And actually we did it Saturday or Thursday night in Florida. And I've done it a couple times at the golf outing, and I can't always do it because I can't always get through.
Oh my God, are you kidding?
The boys are there with me to bail me out, but it's that song that heals me. Yeah,
that's a good one. Yeah. I'm excited about that. And I'm a country fan. I'm a Buffett fan. Yeah. I'm a parrot head.
Yeah.
And I know you are. There is a song that was actually re-released here recently, and it was on the CMAs, and it's Brooks and Dunn, and Jelly Roll did it.
Yeah.
It's called Believe, or I Believe.
Yeah.
And that was one of the songs that, through reading your books and talking to you, that just, it was popping in my head.
Yeah. Yep.
Are you familiar with that song at
all? Yeah, I do. I've heard it. I haven't gone into depth, but people have sent it to me and said, you got to believe this.
Oh, my gosh.
Remember, Jelly Roll's in recovery. Jelly
Oh,
Roll,
yes.
You know, his whole life has turned around through, you know, recovery and faith, you know, and a real God, not that far away God that doesn't touch it, you know. For Jelly Roll to survive, or a guy like me to survive after going through, you have to have a real connection to God. I'll tell you something real briefly. Is the first three nights after Christopher had drowned, I'd come home, and the details are ridiculous. You know, graves and plots and masses and then receptions and getting my son home from college and getting a suit, or he was actually in high school, but getting suits for him to wear and getting Christopher's stuff back from college and getting his car back. All of those things. Every night I'd come home, I'd hit my knees and I'd thank God for my family and my sobriety, but I'd say, we're not good yet. You took my kid. Yeah. I did that three nights in a row. And on the third night, as I laid in bed, I got a download from God, right? It said, I didn't take your son. His recklessness and free will caused him to come home early, and I welcomed him. And remember, I lost a son too. So it was at that moment, Jim, that I knew God didn't move us around like chess pieces. They didn't take Chris to make me pay for past sins of my life. It was Chris had free will and did what he chose to do that caused him to transition and leave this world. God didn't do that to us. You know, there's a great line from The Shack. It said, just because I work incredible good out of unspeakable tragedies doesn't mean I orchestrated the tragedies. So don't blame God. He didn't take your child or your wife or your sister or your mom. You know, events caused those to happen based on free will. But he was there crying with us, like a father does.
Well, I can say I did some blaming and fist shaking.
Yeah.
Especially when my mom passed in 94.
And he's okay with it. He gets it.
Yeah. Like, I did feel bad years later for that, knowing that that wasn't the case. I mean, why would he do that? Why would he want to hurt me? Why would he want to do anything?
But as a father, do you hold your kids accountable for shit they say when they're in pain? You don't.
No.
So our Heavenly Father, God doesn't hold that against you and me.
No.
It's like, yeah, I get it. I get it. I'll be there for you.
Yeah, it's something, man. Well, I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
For sharing the soundtrack with us today. Yeah. And you are an amazing man. And I know you're very modest and you're not going to say, oh yeah, thanks. But you are somebody that I look to as an example in how to carry myself and how to carry the torch that you are so proudly carrying. So, and I got to give me just a second here. And
keep following the breadcrumbs, Jim. That's all you got to do.
Yeah, well, I'm the Hoover vacuum when it comes to that right now.
Yeah.
Well, it's just about time to cue the music for today's episode, but don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe to the Drop the Needle podcast to stay up to date on our latest episodes. I'd also like to take a moment to thank everyone for tuning in today. And I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Drop the Needle podcast. And I'd also like to thank our very special guest, Mr. Joe McQuillan, for being on our show today. So thank you, Joe.
You're welcome. Thanks for helping me spread the word.
I'm going to make sure that I have your email address in the show notes. So if people would like to get in touch with you, and also your website too.
Yeah.
I'll put that on there. Yeah. So I invite you to head on over to our show notes, where there's going to be a link, as I said, to today's playlist and Joe's website and email address. All right, my Drop the Needle posse, like Billy Joel says, from the highs to the lows to the end of our show, this is the end of our show. Until next time, this is Jim Allstott wishing you infinite health and happiness and the perfect playlist for your life. Thank you again for being the best part of us. Catch you next time.